In all honesty, I'm a little hurt because I thought I was communicating well, and then God interrupted it, okay? So my excuse is God sometimes trumps our desires. But my name is Alex, and I am just so thankful. I know many of you. I've worked alongside some of you. I currently work alongside some of you now. I get to see God work in your lives with some of the young adults here, and I'm just very thankful to be part of this church family for the day, and I'm just thankful for the longevity that you guys keep on enduring, and I pray for you guys kind of regularly as you guys are going through a transition phase again. With that said, give you a little bit about myself. Like they said, I'm Alex. My wonderful wife Danielle is right there in the middle with my oldest daughter Becca. I have four other children who decided not to come hear the dad preach. And so maybe they're bored of me, maybe they're, I don't know, but they decided to go to church. We attend Bayview, and so the kids wanted to go to Bayview to see their friends, not their dad. All right, anyway, I'm not hurt at all, you know, but all that to say, I serve as the National Director for Pacific Students for Christ, and that is a new title. That is not something like, that's like, you know, that's no clout, that's nothing really. My wife and I helped start something that has been prayed for a very long time. In 2018, a young lady that's dear friends with Annette went to a missions conference, and she asked, why doesn't UOG have a campus ministry? At the time, many of you guys know Caleb Ludwig and the ministry at UOG has dwindled a little bit. And so because of his passing and other factors, and we can go on a rabbit trail there, but there was no current campus ministry. And so this young lady decided to ask my current supervisor, Laura, why isn't there one? And so they asked her, will you pray? And for 2 years, they prayed. And in 2020, a young man named Sam Halaufia, a Tongan, wasn't allowed to go to Tonga. He was planning to go to Tonga, and it's COVID. They shut it down. So they said, hey, do you want to go to Guam and start it up over there? Meanwhile, we'll shut down too, right? But they send him here, and Sam starts Pacific Students for Christ. 2 years after that, we meet him. It's 2022. My wife and I meet him, and we interact with him. I'm currently serving at PIU, and decide to move on and transition to other opportunities, not knowing what those opportunities are, just trusting the Lord. And my wife and I decide to help Sam. And then Sam's like, hey, Tonga's open. I'm leaving. It's all yours. And so my wife and I, since 2022, the spring semester of 22, we have been engaging and working on the campus of UOG to cultivate a campus movement. On the spring semester of 23, we became an official student org at the campus of UOG. And then this May, we became an official non-prof. Not, we're a pending non-prof status, but we're incorporated here on Guam as a non-prof. And we are excited to see what God does. So the title of National Director is not, I always say it's not real, but it is. And we are excited to see what God's going to do. And I'm just very thankful for the many partnerships. I'm thankful for the Ludwig girls and their commitment to seeing God work. I mean, it's been amazing. I can tell you story after story after story of what God has done in the last 4 years. And it doesn't seem to be ending. And for that, we're just very thankful. But like Mr. Kim said, God's been working on me the last couple of weeks. And I had this great, grandiose vision of sharing Colossians chapter 1, verses 9 through 14. And yesterday, I got punched in the mouth with something the Lord was restoring in my heart. And it's very emotional and very raw. And so I apologize. I cry almost every time I preach because I tend to be this extremely transparent person, and I try hard not to. But it's like I'm one of those guys, man, that like when the Lord is working in me, it is shame on me for not to share it with others because maybe that's what the Lord wants you to hear. And so I'm a very transparent, kind of like where what you see on my sleeve is what you see. And so I'm going to be sharing with you from Numbers chapter 11. And the title of today's sermon is You're Not Alone. And so we are all called to lead. And yes, I teased you about the national director role and this leadership role. But the truth is, all of us lead in some capacity, whether it be leading in your household, whether you're a single mom, single dad, or maybe you're a couple, right? As many dads know, like the idea of leading, whether it be fiscal responsibility, which I'll mention a little later. But even just leading your personal life, that's a reality that I think we undervalue. Like, we have to lead ourselves well. We have to pursue goals individually and try to accomplish them. Because if not, we're just floundering, right? Like, with no purpose. Like, as an individual, you lead yourself. So in every way, we all lead. And Moses also led his people. And we know the story, right? He goes to this burning bush. It draws his attention. And once Moses turns to the burning bush, the bush calls out to him and tells him, you're leading my people. And he's like, but no, I don't want to. God's like, you're going to, but I can't speak what will provide someone. Like, it was the three excuses in total. And God fulfills each of them and doesn't give Moses a real way out, right? And so Moses goes back, and then the people kind of reject him. Like, you? What? And ultimately, he leads them from slavery, from captivity, into this promised land. But let's be honest, the promised land looked very dry and sandy, didn't it? Because at the time, it wasn't no promised land. It was just this pursuit. Moses was leading them into this desert. And if they are people, and you know this is true, we tend to be very short-sighted, don't we? Like, when Moses has this vision that God gave him, and he's leading his people, they don't get that vision. They just see sand and heat, right? They actually got to see a pillar of fire and a pillar of smoke, and you think that would be enough. Be like, whoa. But they forgot that that was God and maybe got short-sighted even in that. But Moses was leading them. And one of the things I've been reading through, which has been a fascinating book, highly recommend it for everyone. It's targeted towards leaders, especially in organizational church leadership. But it's a book by Ruth Haley Barton. And she talks about this idea. She uses Moses throughout the whole story of restrengthening your soul. And she uses him mostly in the way of, like, almost the bad things that he did or the things where he struggled. And she talks about how us as individuals, as leaders, we need to be reminded that we need rest. That she calls it the rhythms of ministry, the rhythms of life, where you pause and remind yourself what you're doing, why you're doing it. And today we're going to dive into Numbers 11, because Numbers 11 is an interesting story. But one of the lines that Ruth Haley talks about, she says this, that leaders can be surrounded by God's people, busy doing good things, and yet feel deeply alone with the burdens they bear. That's exactly how I felt this past 2 weeks. I felt alone. And it wasn't anything specific. It wasn't anything I did. There was no specific moment where I could say, this is why it happened. But if you fast forward to today and take that whole concept of leaders being alone, right? And you ask yourself, like, this is what I thought. I was like, how have I led? The question was, have I led well? Whether it be your life, whether it be your organization, whether it be at work, whatever circumstance you find yourself in, the question that kind of drove me to this really alone place was this thought of, have I led well? And if you're like me, I bet that question just doesn't settle well, right? You become a self-critic. You start evaluating and start thinking, maybe I could have done this better. Maybe I should have taught my kids. I have two kids graduating high school this year. And I can't tell you how excited and terrified at the same time I am. The idea that I have two amazing kids that are going out and they both want to leave Island for college, and I'm telling them, no, please stay. But, you know, they both want to go, and it's like, have I equipped them and prepared them in a way that they will do well out there? Have I done everything I can with the gifts that God has given me to make sure that they will not be run over by the cruelty of this world? Those are the things that have kept me up at night and made me wonder. But that's not the only thing, because when you ask yourself, have I led well? You really start asking yourself, do I even have it together? And it's funny because I think Moses ends up being there. And that's really where I was. I was gripped by the fear of failing the people counting on me. But I want to encourage you today, as much as I sound depressed, and I was telling Peter earlier that this message, it's heavy, and I was trying to find something light in it, and I found this video clip to describe something, and I realized this is not going to go over well. They might think it blasphemous. So I was like, you know, I'm not going to show the video clip. So I was like, let me just focus and just be honest and kind of share my heart, share the passage, and let's see what God has to say. But I want to encourage you, because I don't know what you've been through and what you've experienced. I have no reference. The person I might know the best, besides my wife and my daughter, might be Annette, because I've spent a lot of time with her. But even that, I don't know how her week has been. I don't know how the last 3 weeks have been, because we've been busy. And so, like, I don't know what you've been through. But there is a God who cares deeply for you. And we're going to see that in the midst of such difficulty, you're going to see that Moses is cared for profoundly. And what's beautiful is it's the same care and concern he has for us today. So let's open up. If you have your Bible, open up to Numbers chapter 11. And I'm just going to read. I'm reading from the NIV. And so I'm just going to read verses 1 through 7. I'm going to read it straight through, verses 1 through 17. And it's a simple passage, nothing too extreme. The second part gets a little crazy, but this is a simple passage. Now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. And when they heard them, when he heard them, he was angry. His anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. Okay. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So that place was called Tiberia, because fire from the Lord had burned among them. The rabble with them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. If only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, garlic. That sounds really good, doesn't it? But now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. The manna was like coriander seed and looked like resin. The people went around gathering in it, and when they ground it into the handmill or crushed it in the mortar, they cooked it in a pot and made it into cakes, and it tasted like something made with olive oil. When the dew settled on the camp at night, the manna also came down. Moses heard the people of every family wailing, each at the entrance of his tent. The Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. He asked the Lord, why have you brought this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I give them birth? Why did you tell me to carry them in my arms, as a nurse carries an infant, to the land you promised on oath to their forefathers? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, give us meat. Give us meat to eat. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you are going to treat me, put me to death right now. And if I have found favor in your eyes, and do not let my face, do not let me face my own ruin. The Lord said to Moses, bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come to the tent of meeting, but that they may stand there with you. I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take of the spirit that is in you and put it on them. They will help you carry the burden of the people so that you will not have to carry it alone. It's worth pointing out that this is not the first time Moses is getting help. And this is where that video clip would have come in. I highly recommend it. It's called The Promised Land. It's a YouTube parody on the people in the Moses and the Exodus. And if you ever seen the show Office, it is a parody similar to The Office, where they do like off-camera single recordings. It is hilarious. But in this scene, you have, don't forget, Moses has not, this is not the first time he's getting help. Like, there's a situation where Moses is fighting the Amalekites, and he has to, you know, he has to hold his hands up, and like, he gets tired, and then people come and help him lift it up again, right? But then he gets another one. Jethro comes and visits him. And this episode, episode one, is exactly this episode. And it shows this guy, Jethro, who's critiquing Moses' approach to handling the business. Because if you remember in the story, Exodus 18, if you haven't read it, it's a fascinating story. Moses is sitting in a chair all day long, handling the people's business. So people will come to him and go, hey, this guy stole from me and he's not paying me restitution. And so Moses would be like, all right, pay him what is due, do it now, right? Or this guy took some of my land and his tent is encroaching on it. And Moses would be like, all right, you know, he'll try to resolve everyone else's problems. He was a fixer. And Jethro goes, you are consuming your time fixing other people's problems. So he challenges him. He says, go ahead and get people from each tribe and delegate this responsibility to them. And if it becomes too heavy, bring it up the chain. And so Jethro helped Moses establish an organizational system to help delegate some of the burden. Right? So like the burden that Moses was feeling, maybe here too in Numbers, but the burden's not different. He was caring for the people and it was becoming too cumbersome. And so Jethro advised them to take care of it. And it's no different. So by the time we get to Numbers 11, I bet you that system is, right? Right? Efficient. Most of the issues that Moses will get will be really heavy. And here's one that's really heavy. Right? Because the image you have here is that these people are grumbling because they want meat. Right? It reminds me of that commercial that one time, you know, where's the beef? Right? Like the Arby's commercial. Anyway, but it's this idea that people were complaining and whining because they're sick of manna. Actually, in one of the words, in chapter verse 4, the word rabble, actually, some argue that it might be people who have joined the Israelites that are not Israelites. They're not part of the slaves that were of God's people. The rabble might be the outskirts of people, but the grumbling was enough that it infected others. If you're a parent, you understand this. And I'm not trying to dismay those who don't have parents, but you see it even from kids. If you're not a parent, one kid complains, then it becomes like a domino effect, right? One's like, I'm hungry. And the next thing you know, you realize all your kids are hungry, but they shouldn't be hungry. Or they're all snacking and grabbing stuff from the fridge when you just had dinner. Like, it's like this contagious thing where one group of people complained and wanted meat. And so everyone else, it got to a point where everyone, and this is the part, Moses heard the people wailing throughout their clans, every clan, and the key word there was at their tent. So it wasn't like they were grieving and mourning together. They were whining and complaining at the front of their tent, going, oh, we want meat. Like, so imagine walking through a village here in Guam, and everyone at their front door is, we want power, right? It's just complaining, we want power. Imagine how a GPA person feels, right? The pressure, the burden, I can't fix it. I'm trying, give me a minute. Like, that it's consuming. It's almost debilitating. Like, I love those mayor chats, right? Where the mayor would be like, please do not bother the GPA people, right? Like, leave them alone as they're trying to restore power. Because, you know, there's always that person be like, my power's not working, right? They go to the person, can you? And he's like, I'm fixing the transformer right now that's going to fix your power. Like, it's like delaying them. And it's like Moses is here leading the people and all they're doing is complaining. And think about, like, now let's do that personally. Like, where are you? Like, where are you? Like, are you working your life, doing your thing, and yet God is doing such amazing work in your life, and all you're doing is being unsatisfied and complaining. It's fascinating because I think Moses' life is not reflective of just leaders. I think it's reflective of people who are just trying to honor God. And it doesn't get easier because I really do think that the world is against us at times. And there's moments where we feel like it is us against the world. And it's like, and you can't take it anymore. And so the desire to be tempted in sin. You don't get your way. You're driving in the car. You're in a hurry. You cut that person off, man. And you get that Jesus sticker on the back of your car, right? Woo. Oh, that guy likes Jesus. Oh, he goes to faith church. Ooh, I'm telling, right? Like, I love those cars that say, tell me how I'm driving. Oh, make a mistake. I'm calling right away, right? But you know, that whole idea that like, Moses, that pressure was real. Like, it was, I'm saying all these things to give you a glimpse of the pressure is not an isolated event. The pressure is real to us today. The burden of having to do the right thing, say the right thing, act in such a way. It's real. And no system can fix it, right? Like Moses had the organizational system, but yet that burden wasn't alleviated, was it? And so the last few weeks, this is where it gets real. And let me give you an honest image of what I've been struggling with. So like as a dad, and I'm going to talk up as a dad right now, just because I think it's the closest thing most of you can relate with. But as a dad, it's a tough one when you have kids that are leaving, right? And you start evaluating yourself and going, man, have I done everything I can? And then you start feeling like, oh man, I haven't done enough. And you start feeling like a failure. And so that you get consumed. The pressure just felt so heavy, right? That I almost became debilitated. And then like financially, you start thinking through like, oh man, it's going to be tough. I might have to pick up a second job. See, the burden just got heavier, didn't it, right? And again, I purposely have not talked about how God is going to take the burden. And God says, cast my burdens upon me, for my yoke is easy, my burden's light. I'm separating. I'm dealing with the real life. And I'm not saying God's not real. But the real life emotional response. Because that's where I was 2 weeks ago. Up until this weekend, I felt like a failure. I was so fearful of failing that I was having anxiety attacks. Literally, I'm at my computer losing my breath. I'm like, because I can't move. And I start welling up in tears. It gripped me. The fear gripped me. Because I was so afraid of failing. I knew something was too heavy. And like my kids leaving is only this much of the burden that I felt that was consuming me. But I knew something was too heavy. And before I could diagnose it, before I could fix it or explain it, the only thing I knew and the only thing I knew to do was to cry out to God. That's it. And not to cry out with answers, not to cry out trying to fix it, not to cry out with this hope of the organizational system behind me, this methodology of journaling, reading my Bible, praying. It was a straight up, raw, honest cry out to God. And the crazy part is, it happened yesterday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I changed my message at 3:45 yesterday afternoon, if you want to hear the honest truth. Because the wrestling, this weight wasn't alleviated until I confessed it and cried out to God, honestly. And so does Moses. So we continue in the passage with Moses because I read it all, but you saw that at the beginning, you start seeing this buildup. The people are upset. People are standing at their tent, whining and complaining with no resolve. And Moses is watching this. And then he says, God, why? And I hope you heard a lot of the stuff that he said, because it was truly unfiltered. You have moments like this in scripture. Elijah, he's like, I'd rather die. And then Lord goes, you just need sleep and some food. Right? Like that's what the Lord did for him. You have Jonah, right? Who's like, man, I don't want to do this. And the whole time, God is constantly providing him comfort and shelter. He's providing him shade. And Jonah's sitting there moaning and complaining. But it's funny. Like It takes moments of total brokenness at times or total honesty for us to start recognizing like how short-sighted we are. I think churches need to recognize this sometimes too, because we get so caught up in how our building looks, how our seats are set up, that we forget that there's people out there that don't know Him. And I think that's one of the greatest judgments that I think churches are going to face, because I think our tendency is to get so focused on where we are, then we feel empty and unfulfilled. And then finally, when we cry out, God's like, okay, I got you. See, having a system in place or having like a prayer group in place doesn't automatically mean your burdens get alleviated or everything's going to be fixed. I do believe that prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. I believe that wholeheartedly. But how many of us are honest in the midst of our prayer? How many of us are willing to confess that last night was rough? How many of us are honest enough to tell that, you know, man, I treated that person like crap and I need to confess of that? I think that's the rare thing that we get. Scripture does a great job of unsanitizing people, like of making, realizing that no one's perfect, even the great leaders. And when we look at their approach, we start recognizing that, man, I need to not pretend I'm perfect, so that when you walk into the door to worship the God who knows your heart, that you don't put on that fake smile if you're really not willing, wanting, or needing to smile. Like maybe you're grieving at this point. And this is the place where you should be able to grieve. This is the place where you should be able to walk in and experience the love of God, not just through His Spirit, but through His people. But Moses, unlike what we have today, Moses didn't have that. He was alone in that moment. He was. He had a vision and a heart for a people, and he had to wear it all alone. Psalm 62:8 says, "Trust Him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us." David got it. And you guys know the story. He gets called out in the middle of everything. This is this illustration. It's a powerful illustration. When Nathan's like, "Hey, if this happens, what would you do?" Or, "I would judge him immediately. Condemn him." And Nathan goes, "That's you." And his response was to fall down and wail in front of people. Like, there wasn't this secret moment. There was this total unhinged, like, confession before all of people. And we have the beautiful Psalm 51, right? Right? Like, you know, "Create in me a clean heart, O God." And it's like this idea that, like, God, trust in the Lord. Confess and pour out your heart to Him, because He's able to handle it. But my question goes, though, are we able to handle it? Like, as a church, is shouldn't that be a reflection of who we are? That when people are struggling, they find comfort and peace and hope? The song we sang, "Christ in Me," I was totally humbled by that song, right? Like, it's this idea that, like, "and Christ in me," like, we are Christ to the people that come in. And we are this example, so that in the midst of darkness, in the midst with, like, my only hope, it's like we are an example for them, for people that don't know. The question for us is, when you feel alone, where do you go? Does it stay silent, like at the camp where Moses walked through at their tent doors, this just crying out? Or does it go somewhere? Maybe you need someone to pray for you. Maybe you need someone to talk to. Maybe you really just need to wrestle with God, which is what I needed. I needed to just let it loose. And I had people that care for me spiritually, that were able to just be there. They didn't even say anything. They were just there. And they challenged me. They were the ones that said, "I think this is what you're going to preach on tomorrow." And I was like, "No, I already have. I got it." And they were like, "No, this is your heart." And so I come before you and I end with this. This is my point. I'm not done yet. I still have like 20 more minutes. Just kidding. But I end with this point. My last point is, God hears and addresses the need. And this is the most important part of the whole passage. I want you guys to hear me. This is the most important part of the whole passage. If you've gotten nothing, I ask that you hear this part, because I think this is important for churches. Because when Moses does his unhinged, almost his unfiltered confession to God, he's like, kill me, please, God. Don't make me endure this. God doesn't rebuke him. God doesn't even remove him from leadership, right? Think about how many churches someone has an unfiltered, a weak moment in leadership. What's the first response of most churches? Oh, they're not deserving of that. I was blessed to experience something extremely powerful. And I'm going to share this story because he's an amazing man. A pastor in Galax, Virginia, James Crowley. He confessed his sin before the church. And it wasn't a light sin. It was a sin that has removed many, many pastors before. And you know what? I'm like about to cry because it was so powerful. The image was this. He's behind the pulpit. He's getting ready to resign. He confesses. And then the elder that's been there maybe the longest gets up. He's like at the distance of the guy with the hat. Gets up, comes to the front, and embraces him. Another guy comes up, gets up, and embraces him. By the end, every elder in that church was embracing him. And they told him, we want you to be our pastor. Yes, we need to address this, so you're going to go get this fixed, but we want you back. That church is thriving today. Actually, right now as we speak, they're having a men's conference. And that man is leading so well. But the tendency is that when we unhinge ourselves or do an unfiltered confession, the tendency is, the reason we don't do it is because we fear judgment. We prepare everything in our minds. Oh, I'm going to resign. We go through every step. And yet, God, when Moses did that, God could have easily said, all right, next man up. He could have, right? He could have easily said, all right, Aaron, let's go. But no. God looked at him and said, you are mine. I have chosen you. And guess what? I love your heart. And so the same heart that you have, I'm going to give it to 70 people so that you don't have to do it alone. If that's not what the church's purpose is for, then I don't get it. Imagine if your pastor, whoever, comes up here and goes, I can't do this anymore. I'm stepping away. Imagine if other people came up and went, man, pastor, we got you. How can we help you? What do you need? How can we walk alongside you? But the tendency is that we have systematized and made it an organizational structure where we rely too much on the shoulders of this person, that we forget that the church is not defined by this or by the walls. It's defined by this. Moses names the problem. He goes, it's too heavy for me to bear alone. And God fixed it with the same words. He goes, give me 70 so that you don't have to bear it alone. I have this image. I was in McDonald's this morning because my house is too chaotic. Mind you, I'm still preparing the sermon, right? I went to bed early because I needed to wake up early. So I'm at McDonald's this morning. And I'm like, Lord, man, I need an example for me, not for you, for me, to connect it to Jesus. And it was like clear as day. So I went to John 14. John 14. This is towards the end. Jesus, it's cool because if you have a red letter Bible, 14 to 17 is like all red. So it's this cool moment where Jesus is talking to the disciples. And he promises the Holy Spirit. And he says it this way. He goes, if you love me, you will obey what I command. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another counselor to be with you forever. I'm going to say it again. He will give you a counselor who will be with you forever. There's no end limit to that. There's no if you do this, you get this, and then once you do that, you're on your own. There's no end to this idea that the presence of Jesus, if you follow him and submit yourselves to him and trust in him, your hope If you trust in Him, that He will give you His Spirit, the same Spirit that gave Him the passion to endure the cross, the same Spirit that led Moses to lead the people, the same Spirit that let Paul be shipwrecked, abandoned, beaten, and jailed, to Peter being crucified, the same Spirit is with you right now. And so I sit back and go, if Moses can cry out unfiltered, what's stopping us? Like, why do we pretend to be something we're not? So I come back to my story a little bit. So I'm sitting there just like crying out to God, Lord, I can't do this. And He reminded me, He goes, the victory is mine, not yours, Alex. And I was just so humbled by that statement. Like the tendency is for us to think that our accomplishments define us, that we get to check the box that I did it. And Jesus told me very specifically, no, I did it. And so I realized I was putting my hope in me and not in Him. And it was so subtle. I've been doing ministry for over 30 years. Oh, 29 years. I've been involved in ministry for, I turned 47 on Wednesday, and if I do the math anyway, but yeah, I've been doing ministry. I've been involved in church or working alongside churches for 29 years. And I sat back, and this is not new, but it was so humbling because I am not an anxiety-driven person. Those of you that know me, I make decisions, and if they fall, they fall. I don't care. Like, if it fails, okay. I mean, those that worked at PIU, I made constant decisions. And I always sought forgiveness before asking permission. Like, that was just me at PIU. And I had to, I've always felt that way. And yet now I am debilitated. I can't even make a decision. I am walking in fear of making decisions. And then God reminded me going, oh, Alex, it's not whether you don't care about the decision or care about it. It's about whose hope you're putting in. Like, you're putting all the weight on yourself when He's going, I got it. It's already done. God gave him 70 elders. The 70 elders were not a one-time miracle for Moses. They were a pattern. Galatians 6:2. I'm going to read it to you. Ooh, I have it here. Sorry. I'm going to read it to you. It says, bear one another's burdens, so fulfill the law of Christ. And the word burden there, I want you guys to get this image now. This is where the kicker is. This is what I want you guys to catch. The word burden has the same weight component. So like burden, heaviness is the same weight word in Hebrew. When Moses says this is too heavy, it has the same word in Hebrew and the same word for burden in Greek. And then Galatians has the same, it's too heavy. So when Paul says bear one another's burdens, he's saying carry one another's heavy stuff. Carry, like together. He's talking it to, about it. And he says, what does that do? It fulfills the law of Christ. So this place shouldn't be a place where you come in and you fake it. You come in and say, everything's great. This place should be, I love that you guys did a call to confession. And you go to a modern church today, they kind of throw those out the window. But I think the Catholic Church got something right of this idea of daily confessions. Like, when was the last time you earnestly confessed to God? And recognize that you are nothing without Him. And it's this whole concept, right? Like you look at it going, you're fulfilling the law of Christ when you bear one another's burdens. But how can you bear someone else's burden if you don't know what it is? So, I am done. But I'm going to end with a poem. It's significant. It's what broke me down, honestly, eventually. It's a poem it's Ted Loader, and it's from the Gorillas of Grace. And it reads as follows. Hear me quickly, Lord, for my mind soon wanders to other things I am more familiar and more concerned about than I am with you. Words will not do, Lord. Listen to my tears, for I have lost much and fear more. Listen to my sweat, for I wake at night overwhelmed by the darkness and strange dreams. Listen to my sighs, for my longing surges like the sea, urgent, mysterious beckoning. Listen to my growling gut, for I hunger for bread and intimacy. Listen to my curses, for I am angry at the way of the world. The way of the world comes down on me sometimes, and sometimes I on it. Listen to my crackling knuckles, for I hold very tightly to myself and anxiously squeeze myself into others' expectations and them into mine, and then shake my fist at you for disappointing me. Listen to my footfalls, for I stumble to bring good tidings to someone. Listen to my groans, for I ache towards healing. Listen to my worried weariness, for my work matters much to me and it needs help. Listen to my tension, for I ache towards accepting who I am and who I cannot be. Listen to my hunched back, for sometimes I cannot bear the needs and demands of the world anymore, and I want to put it down and give it back. Listen to my laughter, for there are friends and mercy, and something urges me to think. Listen to my humming, for sometimes I catch all unaware the rhythms of creation, and then music without words rises in me to meet it. And there is the joy of romping children and dancing angels. Listen to my blinky eye, for at certain moments, when sunlight strikes just right, or a star pierces darkness just enough, or clouds roll around us just so, or snow kisses the world into quietness, everything is suddenly transparent. And something in me is pure enough for an instant to see your kingdom in a glance, and so to praise you in a gasp, quick, then gone. But it is enough. Listen to me quickly, Lord. Amen. Jesus, I thank you. I thank you that you love us so much and that we are not alone. Lord, as Moses walked through his people and heard their cries, Lord, and it was too much for him to bear. Lord, may our people be empathetic, be aware. May your spirit make us alive and aware to the hurts of others around us, that we may hear their cries, but know that it is not our job to fix it, Lord. It is your job, and Lord, may we be used by you. And Lord, let us not be too arrogant enough to confess that we need you, Lord, and that we are weak and we are frail, Lord, and that I can't do it on my own. Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for the cross. You now pray. Amen.